Have Governor Walker's policies and budget changes hurt or helped the poor in Wisconsin, especially when it comes to health care coverage? A piece by Christian Schneider, who is a senior fellow at the Wisconsin Policy Research Institute, caught our attention yesterday. It was entitled Unions Versus the Poor. As Wisconsin government workers protest, Governor Walker spends more on the needy and sick, is the title of this piece. We asked Christian Schneider to join us to talk about his thoughts on this, but he was unable to this hour. So we have two different guests with two different takes. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It is 8 minutes past 7 o'clock on this Thursday, May 3rd, and I have a frog in my throat. We will welcome your input for both of our guests. Robert Craig is Executive Director of Citizen Action of Wisconsin. We'll talk with him this half hour. And in our next half hour, we will talk with a UW River Falls professor who thinks that Governor Walker's policies have been good for Wisconsin. 1-800-642-1234. Or send an email to talk at WPR.org, or you can post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. Robert Craig is Executive Director of Citizen Action of Wisconsin, and he joins us by telephone. Good morning.
Good morning, Joy. Always great to be with you.
Well, it's good to have you. I hope I don't start coughing all of a sudden through this through this interview. But we wanted to talk with you because at the same time, Christian Schneider was saying that Governor Walker is spending more on the needy and sick and points to increased spending for Medicaid programs in Wisconsin. You were out protesting cuts to Badger Care. So what's going on?
Well, Governor Walker got approved major changes to Badger Care that will cause 17,000 people to lose their coverage. That's from the nonpartisan Legislative Fiscal Bureau. He had proposed changes that would have forced 65,000 people off the program, roughly nearly 30,000 children, but those were disallowed by the federal government because they violated the Affordable Care Act, the National Health Care Reform Law. I haven't seen Christian Schneider's particular article, but I think the case that conservatives have tried to make is that Walker put more general purpose revenue into Medicaid. And I think at medical assistance programs that include Badger Care, include long-term care. And that is sleight of hand, quite frankly, because there was a temporary stimulus from the federal government of increased federal Medicaid money for the last budget, which was designed to put money into the program and to free up other state money to make sure that we had as much spending as possible during the heart of the deep recession. And so saying that Walker put more general purpose revenue, state revenue that is, into Medicaid, it doesn't mean that he's making a greater investment in Medicaid. It just has to do with the stimulus, federal stimulus money drying up and therefore the state having to resume its investment in Medicaid and Badger Care. The fact is that his policy has been to cut Badger Care, to cut Medicaid, as far as actual recipients, and this could actually have been stopped very easily with closing just some of the new just one of the new tax loopholes he's created. There's a bill called the Badger Care Protection Act by Senator John Rickenbacker and Senator John Richards that fully funds Badger Care by removing a tax loophole that allows large multi-state corporations to hide profits out of state and avoid state taxation and not pay their fair share.
Mm-hmm. I presume the argument for having that loophole is that that somehow will encourage these businesses to do business in Wisconsin.
Well, I mean, that's the argument. It's hard to see how helping state businesses that are multi-state, the largest corporations, reduce state taxation in Wisconsin is going to create jobs. In fact, it encourages them to shift money out of state. But that's the debate we're having right now, because Governor Walker's position has been that having more tax breaks for large corporations, not having them pay their fair share in dealing with the state budget issues that we did face, is somehow going to stimulate the economy. And as you know, the reverse has happened. Wisconsin, from March 2011 to March 2012, had the worst job performance in the country, 50 out of 50.
Yeah, and what do you say to his argument, Governor Walker's argument, that the job losses are due to the protests and the recall uncertainty that's happening in the state?
Well, I mean, the argument keeps switching. Basically, he made this bold, he campaigned on creating 250,000 jobs over 4 years. He made bold promises about how his policies would put Wisconsin ahead of other states like Illinois, and we're behind all of them. We're way behind Illinois. And it's an absurd argument to say that the protests have caused the poor job performance. He's just grasping at straws. But quite frankly, even if you accept the premise that that could have any impact on the economy, Governor Walker is the one who decided to drop the bomb, as he called it, and end collective bargaining for all intents and purposes for most public employees in Wisconsin, and to create the largest state protest in modern Wisconsin history against him. So he bears responsibility for the protest and the recall, I would say. But even so, it's an absurd economic argument. It's just spin, quite frankly. It's not a serious economic argument.
Yeah, so why do you say, how could Governor Walker's changes have resulted in the job losses that Wisconsin experienced?
Well, one way they did is that actually reducing the number of public employees dramatically, which is what's happened at the local level, and reducing their salaries, in effect, greatly, takes money out of the economy. So what he's touting as savings actually has taken money out of the economy and therefore reduced consumer demand in Wisconsin. He also just hasn't had a serious strategy for creating good jobs in Wisconsin. That's what we need. We need more high-paying jobs, and that means investments in jobs and real standards for jobs. And he's done the opposite. He's taken the position that if we throw more money at what he calls job creators, they will in turn feel more confidence and create jobs. And we've seen none of that. You can't say that Wisconsin's doing worse because of the international economy, because of the national economy, because Wisconsin's doing relatively worse than every other state. So it really is, it certainly undermines his claim that this was going to be an effective strategy, and it undermines it resoundingly.
Christian Schneider's piece ended with this. It bears repeating, in a budget that nearly closed a $3.6 billion deficit and didn't raise taxes, Walker's government employee reforms allowed him to spend $1.2 billion more to help Wisconsin's poor and ill. The unions believe it would have been more charitable to leave that money resting comfortably in their pension accounts. A poor child needing a new wheelchair would probably disagree. What's your reaction to that?
Well, it's absurd to say that their goal in reducing pay and benefits, public employees, and removing their fundamental rights was to help the poor. The major expenditures that have occurred under Governor Walker have been for large corporate tax breaks and tax breaks for the wealthy. And he's enacted $2.2 billion worth over the next 10 years. The idea that, and you know, Rebecca Clayfish, the lieutenant governor's, claimed this as well, that somehow this is to help the poor. Quite the contrary, he'd be cutting 65,000 people off Badger Care if the federal government would let him, if it didn't violate the national health care reform law. In addition, there's a new report, it came out last week, there's a very great concern, and there's been a letter to the federal government from two state representatives, that there are 22,000 people that are eligible for Badger Care that have not been allowed onto the rolls. New slots have opened up, which is probably a violation of agreements with the federal government. So I think it's absurd to say that the goal of the Walker administration or the outcome has been to help the needy or poor in Wisconsin. It's made the matters much worse.
We are talking with Robert Craig, Executive Director of Citizen Action of Wisconsin, who is critical of Governor Walker's reforms and says that they are hurting the poor in Wisconsin, especially when it comes to Badger Care coverage. And we're welcoming your thoughts, your questions, 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. We will get another perspective from a different guest after 7:30. Checking the weather forecast for today. Looks like lots of rain and some severe weather also possible. A severe thunderstorm warning is now in effect for northwestern Vernon, La Crosse, and southern Trempealeau counties until 8 o'clock this morning. Penny-sized hail and winds topping 60 miles per hour possible. There's a flash flood warning for Winnebago County until 8 this morning and until 9 for Manitowoc and Calumet counties. There is a portion of Highway 41 around the Fond du Lac area that's closed due to flash flooding this morning. Otherwise, today, cloudy, periods of rain, highs will be in the 70s. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. It is 19 minutes past 7 o'clock on this Thursday, May 3rd. We are talking about Governor Walker's policies and how they have affected Wisconsin's economy, jobs, health care coverage. Our first guest is critical of Governor Walker's policies, Robert Craig, Executive Director of Citizen Action of Wisconsin. Coming up after 7:30, we will talk with a guest who says that Governor Walker's policies have been good for Wisconsin. A professor of management at UW River Falls, Brian Huffman, will join us after 7:30. And we welcome your thoughts, your questions, your views, 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. Our first caller is Paul in Richland Center. Hello, Paul.
Hi. Well, Joy, first of all, if you are sick, you're a public employee, so you can't afford to go to the doctor, so you're going to have to tough it out.
I'm not sick, but I did have a cough. You're right. And I am a public employee. I should disclose that every time I do a show like this.
Well, I will disclose, too. I'm a retired public employee in Wisconsin. My issue basically is with any kind of talk of health care, whether it's at the state level or the federal level, when anybody is thrown off of any kind of health care, whether it's affordable or not to them, those people are still going to get sick. And they end up going to the emergency rooms and the urgent cares in our local hospitals, and they rack up huge amounts of bills that the rest of us with health insurance, such as myself, have to pay for. And what I never understand in this argument is hearing the outrage from people that do have health insurance, why they're so opposed all the time to, you know, why they're not opposed, I should say, to why these people are being thrown off of any kind of health care, because we end up paying for it. My deductibles doubled since January 1st. In order to keep my own health insurance as a retired public employee. Now, granted, I have decent health insurance, and I'm glad I've got it, but I never hear that argument that we pay for it, those of us, because those people are still going to get sick, and by the time they do end up in the emergency rooms and urgent cares, it's even going to be more expensive because there was no preventative care that they were able to access before that. Yes, in my community, we have a free clinic, but that's only open one day a week. So I guess I would kind of like that, you know, kind of talked about, is where's the outrage from people that have health insurance when we hear any stories, whether it's Walker or whomever, you know, trying to throw these people off of any kind of care because we end up paying for it.
Robert Craig?
Caller makes an absolutely great point here. If you have fewer people who cannot get coverage anywhere else, if you force them off Badger Care, it'll lead to cost shifting, and so they will eventually get sick. It'll be much more expensive care, emergency room care, and that actually increases the price of private insurance. And so Governor Walker can tout that he saved money by having 17,000 less people on Badger Care. He just shifted the cost onto us, and then he declaimed victory by saying that state expenses went down a little. So it's a wrong-headed policy, and quite frankly, I think the caller's a little too pessimistic about where the public is on this. Badger Care is extremely popular. It might be the most popular state Medicaid program in the country, and it's because everyone knows someone in their social network, in their family, who only gets coverage through Badger Care, and where the private health insurance market is either too expensive, we've had a doubling of premiums in the last decade, or where the health insurance industry will discriminate against people with pre-existing conditions. And so, caller's absolutely right. It doesn't save money at all. It just shifts it onto our private insurance.
Mm-hmm. Well, as we touched on, you've been touring the state this week to draw attention to these Badger Care changes. The Walker administration is saying it could have been far worse, that this is a compromise plan with just 17,000 people losing their Badger Care benefits instead of 65,000. So could have been worse?
Well, it could have been, because Governor Walker wanted to force 65,000 people off, nearly 65,000 and nearly 30,000 children. And the Affordable Care Act, which Governor Walker dislikes passionately, that's the national health care law, prevented him from doing that. And so it wasn't, he shouldn't get credit for only cutting 17,000 off. And I put only in quotes, because 17,000 is a lot of people. That's 17,000 stories of people who aren't going to have access to basic coverage. And of course, I would add in the 22,000 that's come to light that have been denied access to Badger Care that should have been enrolled. So that gets you to 39,000 people.
So what happens to the 17,000 that won't be on Badger Care anymore?
Well, the administration and the Fiscal Bureau don't know exactly. Some of them may be able to get coverage at work, but a lot, we think most of them, and health policy experts agree with this, will end up uninsured. A few will not, will find some way, but most of them will become uninsured, and then that's a huge problem. And as I said, it's very unpopular. Most people think that the private health insurance market does not work well for low-income working people, and that Badger Care is a critical safety net so that everyone has access to basic coverage.
Patrick in Brookfield is with us. Hello, Patrick.
Hello. Thanks for taking my call. So thank you for joining us this morning, Mr. Craig. I just wanted to call out one item that you mentioned regarding rights and how Governor Walker has actually destroyed some rights that unionized government workers previously had. If this truly was a right, don't you think that two of the most rights-conscious presidents that we've ever had in history, one being President Obama and the other one being President Carter, don't you think they would have given these rights to their government workers that work in federal staff? And isn't it more likely that unionized workforces for a government in which we cannot pick another government is more like a bribery scheme and not some form of protection for workers?
I'm not sure you're prepared to answer whether a collective bargaining is a right or not, Robert Craig, but what do you think?
Oh, I'm happy to comment on that. I think it is. I think it's in the UN. It's in the UN Declaration of Rights. It's a fundamental right to free association, and it creates much more democracy in the workplace. Now, you can talk about how it is structured. You can talk about, you can negotiate over benefits, etc. But it's a fundamental right to be able to have a union, I believe. Now, what the call is referring to is that federal government workers only have very limited collective bargaining rights. I would support expanding those. It's difficult because Congress includes a lot of representatives of states that are right to, they're quote-unquote right-to-work states. They're states where people do not have strong unions. He talked about it being bribery. I just don't agree. Anything can be, abused. But the fact of the matter is that public employees should have the same rights as private employees to have a union if they want one. And the government does not have to give anything on collective bargaining. It's a process. It's been pointed out that you can actually, I'm not saying it's good policy, but you can actually negotiate for reduced health care benefits, for increased health care copays, pension copays, through collective bargaining. It's been done all over the state by municipalities in the state. You didn't have to eliminate worker rights to do that if that was the policy.
I was going to bring our caller back, but he's left. Stevens Point is next. Hello, Steve.
Hey, good morning. I'd just like the guest to explain or help me understand economically that if we had a lot of job loss over the last year and our last in the nation, we reduced government workers' salaries and benefits, that why, if I assert that if we doubled their salaries and benefits and we doubled the number of state workers, that would not lead to a tremendous improvement in the Wisconsin economy.
All right. Did you follow that, Robert Craig?
I did, and I would say that we do need to make investments in the economy that will spur more high-quality jobs, and every government expenditure we make ought to have high standards. So where we have accountability, where they're for good jobs, and money gets returned to taxpayers if it doesn't produce those jobs. So you, what you need to do that, is to evaluate where the best investments are. And I wouldn't say it's just doubling state employees or government or public employees. That wouldn't be the best investment. Expanding the tech colleges might well be, but Governor Walker cut them 30%, but then has gone around the state complaining that there's a skills mismatch and that that's harming employment. So I would say that you should make more investments and investments in the economy that produce more high-paying jobs and therefore more consumers do spur the economy on. And Governor Walker's austerity approach has gone the opposite direction, which is probably the main reason that we're dead last in job creation over a 12-month period.
The governor was touting recently that his reforms saved taxpayers $1 billion. Does he deserve any credit for that?
Well, it depends. I mean, he doesn't for process, right? To not run on what he did at all, and then to balance the state budget and mostly on the backs of one sector of our state is unfair. So what he did was fundamentally unfair, but it's also kind of misleading to tout these just as savings. If you actually cut that much money to local government and education, that absolutely affects the quality of public services. The idea you could cut $1.2 billion out of all levels of education and then not harm our education system, which is a vital engine for our economy, is an absurd proposition. He wants to say it's just efficiency, it's just savings. There were no losses from the curtailed investment. I would say that he has rolled back investments that we have made for generations in Wisconsin and jeopardized their economic future.
All right. Well, we're out of time. Thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you, Joy. Hope you're feeling better.
I'm better. Just had a coughing fit when we first started. All better. Robert Craig, Executive Director of Citizen Action of Wisconsin. We will welcome in a different guest with a different perspective on this after we check news. Brian Huffman, Professor of Management at UW-River Falls and Faculty Advisor for the UW-River Falls College Republicans, will make the case that Governor Walker's policies have been good for Wisconsin. And we will welcome your views, too. What do you think? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network.